With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I just got off Instagram live chat, so I didn't get a chance to do a couple things, but I want to thank you guys for tuning in. If you missed the chat, it was about National Multiple Sclerosis Awareness Month. We had a doctor and we had a person dealing with MS on the show, and I'm going to upload that to Blog Talk Radio so that you can hear that interview. But again, thank you for tuning in. You can check me out on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. You can also email me, saturdayswithjoykeys@hotmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. If you miss a show, you can hear them on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio and on Google. Well, right now, I'm going to be speaking with, a military historian. He's a director, published author. He has film rights to his book, co-authored with Denise George, The Last 11, have been acquired. Robert Child has also garnered more than 26 writing and directing awards, including an Emmy nomination, and is one of only a handful of writer-directors whose work has been screened in the United States Congress. His film, The Warest 11, was nominated for an Emmy and won highest honor at the GI Film Festival in Washington, D.C. So if you have a question about history, I guess in the military, this is the guy. And I think he's on the line right now. Let's see if this is Robert Child.
Yes, it is, Joy.
Robert?
How are you?
Hi,
yes.
How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for waking up and would be willing to do the interview on a Saturday morning.
Sure. Yeah, I'm actually in a hotel room, so I'm on the
road.
Oh,
wow.
But,
oh, my gosh. Are you getting pancakes or at least French toast or something special for breakfast?
Oh, I already grabbed a Starbucks, so I'm good.
Okay, you're Starbucks. Wait, well, what's your favorite meal of the day? Is it breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
I think it is breakfast. Yeah.
It is breakfast? What would you eat?
Yeah,
what would you eat if you were home? What would you eat if you were home?
I would make a nice breakfast sandwich with eggs and sausage or bacon and have it on an English muffin. That's my favorite.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yummy. Okay, my mouth is watering. Okay, we got to stop talking about that. Let's talk about the book that you wrote, Immortal Valor, The Black Medal of Honor Winners of World War II. I mean, at first, okay, I have to tell you, I'm a woman. I don't know if you know that or not, but I'm a woman. So I was thinking, like, this military book, this is a guy's book. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get into it, but, you know, it's about a black military. I want to read it. I was absorbed. Like, I wanted to find out what happened to these guys. I was glued to the page. I mean, and I was sad. I was happy at times. I was laughing at other times about the silly things, you know, like the fat guy, he couldn't fit into the tank. You know, it was really much more than I thought and really surprised me. I was pleasantly surprised. And the level of detail that you put into it, I felt like I was there with them. I was there on wherever field they were, if they were going to the castle, if they were stuck in a town and the guy threw himself on his commander. So many places I felt I was there and learned so much more about these different wars. How did you get started on this path of being a historian?
Well, I was a history minor in college, and I always loved history. But then I went by a communications degree, then I went into radio, then television, and I used to do a lot of shows in New York. But I always wanted to do my own projects, and about 20 years ago, I started doing my own independent work, military history, film for PBS, on different wars, Civil War, World War II, other places like that. So I'd always had a love of military history.
Now, have you ever been in the military, anybody in your family in the military, or do you just like studying?
I've never been in the military, but I discovered that my great-grandfather was at Gettysburg, fought at Gettysburg, and won the Commendation for Valor at Fredericksburg. So it's sort of in the DNA. It's in my family line.
Wow, that's a really cool finding. Now, with this book, how long did it take you to write? Because there's so much detail for each of the men, and then you even have the epilogue, kind of, you know, what happened a little later. How long did it take?
It took a year and a half to write it. Sorry.
And how?
Someone just at my
how
door.
Did you? Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. It was the housekeeping. Sorry.
That's okay. So how did you choose the men that you chose? Because you have a couple guys, but then in the epilogue you talk about some others. How did you choose the ones you chose? I mean, I know you probably were like, darn, I wanted to put everybody in, you know?
Yeah. No, these men that I chose, the seven, were the only seven that received the Medal of Honor for World War II service, which is a very small number because there were over a million African Americans in service in World War II. So that's how I chose them. They had received the highest medal for bravery in World War II.
Now, like I was saying, the story is not all grim details of blood and gore and things like that. And there's there's a lot of fun parts. And you talk about friendships, and you talk about family and love. You know, one of the things that I really was sad was George Watson. Somehow
Sure.
I grabbed onto him, and he was – he was a guy. Can you tell the audience who George Watson was, a little bit about his story?
Yeah, George Watson was one of the Medal of Honor recipients, and he served in Southwest Pacific. And when the war broke out, just prior to the war breaking out, he got married. And but he had to leave his wife because he really wanted an education, a degree. And he left for the... for Colorado to pursue an engineering degree, and the marriage didn't last because of the distance. But during that time, right after he was graduated, he enlisted in the military. He was drafted and served in the Southwest Pacific on a ship. He was actually in a laundry service corps. And do you want me to tell what happened to him?
No, we don't that's fine. I mean, that's just one of the stories where you, the beginning, you see how lighthearted he is, how kind he is. That's how he won his wife over. And he was a great swimmer. And unfortunately, that was his downfall. I won't tell any more past that, but that's all I'm going to say. Another guy I really love was Baker. Wow, what fight he had in him. I mean, he was absolutely amazing getting to this castle. Talk about him a little bit, Vernon J. Baker.
Sure. Vernon Baker was from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and he entered the military because he couldn't find a job. He was jobless, as he said, so he turned to the military and trained in Arizona and became part of the 92nd Division in Italy. And he was one of the smarter men in the unit, so that was recognized by his commanders, so he was upgraded to a company clerk in his company. And during training, the men became a little bit jealous of him because he was so intelligent. So they gave him a hard time, his fellow soldiers. But, you know, he wasn't going to apologize for being smart. So he wouldn't. So he went to Italy and served in Italy with the 92nd Division. And because of circumstances that occurred, he took over command of his unit. I don't know what's happening on my computer, but he took over command of his unit and served as a company commander de facto. But he knew that they would never elevate him to formally appoint him company commander. But he fulfilled that role because his commander was wounded. And just before his Medal of Honor action, three new white commanders came into the unit, and one in particular became his commander. And his white commander had never served in combat, didn't even have 1 second of combat yet.
Runyon, that was his name.
Runyon. Yep. Captain Runyon. And Baker, had to answer to him. And Baker essentially served as the de facto commander because the men didn't trust Runyon because he had no experience. And what happened is they were trying to take a castle position on a hill that was heavily fortified that the entire regiment wasn't able to capture, but it fell to Baker's unit. They made their way up the hill, and as soon as they encountered some very stiff resistance from the castle mortar fire, his captain, Captain Runyon, went and hid in a shed. And left
the
men.
Like, are you kidding me? This guy is sitting there with his head between his legs. I'm like, I can't believe this.
Yeah. And, of course, I didn't make that up. I mean, that's from Baker's own, you know, writings. That's what happened. And this captain said, I'm going to go down and get help. We need help, so I got to go. Baker said, well, you know, okay, you know, but we need reinforcements. And he said, I'll send them up. And he disappeared and left the men on their own. So Baker held the position, which was the farthest towards the castle that any unit had gotten, and Runyon went back, and he told his commander to not worry about the rest of the unit because they'd all been wiped out, which they hadn't. So they never sent reinforcements. So Vernon and his men were up there thinking that they were going to receive reinforcements, and they never did. And they held out as long as they could, and he lost 19 men out of 26 trying to hold that hill, and finally they made their way down. And, you know, it was an incredible experience for all of them. But
I mean, absolutely
that's
amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, amazing. But, you know, that's essentially what happened.
I mean, what is all these guys, it's this fighting spirit, to protect a land, as we know, did not want to protect them as African Americans at that time, you know, segregation and racism. And even inside the military, they could not excel, even though they were asked to, you know, come and fight for your country. Only a few were able to, you know, excel and become officers. Another great character, Edward Allan Carter, in Shanghai. That blew me. I was like, wait, where is he? He's in where? I didn't read that right. I had to go back. I said, let me go. Okay, I did it. He's what? Okay. That was another story. Black guy in Shanghai.
Yep.
Talk about Edward Allan Carter for the audience.
Sure. Edward Allan Carter was born in Los Angeles, but his parents were missionaries. His mother was from India, and they decided to leave Los Angeles. His father was a preacher, and first they moved to India, and then they moved to Shanghai when he was only 15. And they lived in the International Settlement in the early 30s. And that was a very cosmopolitan area in the early 1930s. They didn't experience the Great Depression there as the rest of the world was experiencing at the time. So they were sort of sheltered. But during that time, there was great prosperity in China and Shanghai, and the Japanese were jealous of what was going on. So the Japanese decided to attack specifically Shanghai when Carter was living there with his family. And, of course, they became refugees. But Carter didn't want to just hang around in the shelter. He decided to, his father was pretty domineering. He decided to, go on an adventure and actually join the Chinese 19th Army to fight against the Japanese.
And he was only 15. He was only 15 years old,
yeah.
and he finagled himself. He was talking based on what you did in the book. Because of his military schooling, the guy was like, okay,
yep.
We need fighters, so go ahead.
He attended school at the Shanghai Military Academy, and he knew Chinese, the dialect, and they said, okay, come on in. And in China, there wasn't the racism as there was in this country, and there still remains, against blacks. It just wasn't there, which was amazing. And so they welcomed him in, and he fought side by side with the Chinese until his father, they were distraught, wondering what had happened to him. Then they started to hear rumors that he was in the military. His father came to the unit he was serving in and told his commander that, he's underage. Eddie is only 15. And they didn't realize that because he was sort of big. And so he hauled his son back out of the military. And
I was mad at the father at that point, kind of. I was like, okay, dude, look, what are you going to do for him? He's always getting in trouble. At least, I think we lost Robert Child. Hopefully he'll call back in. Well, I'll tell you one of the stories. He ended up fighting in America, and they were in Germany, and somehow he was able to capture some German soldiers. Oh, okay, he got back on. Here we go. Robert?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's okay.
Yes.
Technology, it happens. I was just letting him know that he captured some German soldiers, and nobody knew that he knew how to speak German. I was laughing. I was like, this is great.
Yep.
Oh, my
did.
God.
He learned German in school.
That's so amazing. I mean, that's just something to talk about American education. They still have it backwards here. They all say that kids learn languages better when they're younger, yet we don't teach language until high school in most places.
I agree.
It's still crazy, yeah. Right?
It is
let me
crazy
ask you
because
this. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Because children are much more receptive to learning languages when they're younger. I agree with that. Yeah, very much so.
Now, another exciting thing that I liked you put in there was about this female reporter, Stringer. Now, she wasn't one of the black soldiers, but I just like that you put it in there, talking about women who reported from the front lines. I would never have thought that a young woman, I mean, she was 26, that's young, was in the front lines. And she, her husband, Bill Stringer, was killed.
Yes.
We talked about in the Normandy invasion, but she reported from France and Holland and Belgium, Germany. I was really impressed. And I've never heard of her, so it's just great to see a female person in history at that young age doing some great things, and just like you, almost a historian of sorts.
Yeah, I agree, and it surprised me in my research when I discovered her as well, I could feel that she really had she wanted to tell stories that, were different. especially following, you know, the African-American soldiers and what they were doing. And she certainly was a historian, you know, in her time, and very brave, that's for sure.
Now, you're a Caucasian male, and you're writing about African-American history. Had you found anything that really surprised you, that stuck out, that you were like, what? That? How in the world? You know, something like that.
In what way? In
I guess in the, what, the
in
way that,
service?
You know, sometimes people dismiss things that are happening to African-Americans in terms of racism and discrimination. But because you're a historian, I'm sure you've read and studied, you know, many books and spoke to people and interviews and things of that nature. But has there ever been anything that you were like, oh, my God, I never knew that. I didn't had no idea that that was going on.
Yes. A lot of the racism in the South was a surprise to me. How it was the cultural norms of the time, especially where African-American soldiers went off base, you know, in the South, most of them served and, you know, trained in the South. And when they went into the town, they had to avert their eyes and look at the ground whenever they encountered a white person, which I had never heard of that. But that was very well known to people in the South. And, I was trying to put myself back in that time, and it was difficult to comprehend, but you know, that's the way it was, and people don't realize it today, that it's virtually not known unless you grew up in the South or stories passed down. But that really surprised me, the culture, the environment in the South for black soldiers, and they definitely were fighting a war at home and fighting a war abroad. As I mentioned, the Double V campaign. There was a campaign in early 1942 that was launched by a black newspaper in Pittsburgh called the Pittsburgh Courier, which was essentially black soldiers, you know, served in the military and fought for America, and they deserved the equality when they returned home. That was the whole thrust of the Double V campaign, victory abroad, which meant victory, equality at home. And unfortunately for most black Americans, when they returned from the war, that didn't happen. Didn't happen till the 60s in the Civil Rights Movement. So they returned to a nation that was just as prejudiced, unfortunately, as it was before they left for the war.
Yeah, well, and then you talk about how the government was like told the newspapers, if you know, you just be quiet about this thing, you know, just be quiet about it right now. We won't shut you down.
Yeah.
So that's something else you talked about in the book as well. Now, you know, you're a historian. I'll bring it up again because now history of African Americans is trying to be obliterated or not shared or told or taught in schools. What's your thought about that, and what do you think can be done about that?
Well, you know, my belief is everybody's history is important. Everyone counts. And I don't think we can divide up, you know, certain section of history that cannot be told. That doesn't make any sense to me, you know, to cover things up. So I'm very adamant that, you know, all history should be taught. You know, there's a lot of incidents in this country that, you know, don't reflect well on the population, but we have to tell both the good and the bad, you know, to know who we are in America. And hopefully, you know, get better the next day and the next year and the next, you know, in the future. So we have to know our history. It's very important.
Has there been any talk? Has there been any talk about making this somehow into a movie? Because I could see this would be a great film.
Yeah,
yes, it has? Okay.
Yeah, I've been contacted by a producer for the History Channel. and I don't want to let too many details out, but yes.
Nope. Okay. Okay. We don't want to jinx it.
Definitely in talks.
We don't want to jinx it.
Yep.
But I
yeah.
said it. So just remember, I said it that I thought it would be a great idea.
Well, you're not the first.
I'm not the first. Oh darn, shucks. Okay, but at least I'm in the line.
Yep. Yep.
What was your favorite story in the book? What was your favorite story or favorite male fighter in the book, soldier?
I can't pick a favorite, absolutely, because they're all important to me. But
okay.
The experience of Reuben Rivers and his whole unit, I loved. I loved
yes.
writing that story. Because of his white commander who came in with all these ideals about black soldiers, you know, serving and serving, you know, in line with white soldiers, and then he became disillusioned, and then, you know, he
You're
left the unit.
Williams,
it's all true.
Right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. David Williams. Yeah, he left the unit in disgust, but then he got sent back to the unit.
I felt so bad for him. I was like, oh my God, you got sent back. I was laughing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was great though, because he learned about himself and they were able to bond, you know, a friendship, I think, based on what you were saying. Could you read some of the book today? Would you be able to read some?
Yeah, I have the introduction here, the section of the introduction I can read, and about 5 minutes of it or so, or a few minutes of it. So let me see.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Where I had a place picked out here.
I'm going to be giving away some copies of your book, so I want to encourage people to check me out on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys, so you can win a copy of Robert Child's book, Immortal Valor.
Oh, great. Great. Sounds great.
Yeah.
I'll share that on my Twitter when I see it. But I have a section here
Twitter,
I can read.
What's your Twitter handle? What's your Twitter handle?
It's Rob Child, at Rob Child.
Okay. So people want to follow you or just see what's going on or when the book becomes a movie, which I would love to see that. Rob Child on Twitter, you can follow him. Okay, were you able to find your section?
Yeah, I have my section here.
Okay.
And I'll read it. The medal that we know today as the United States' highest award for military valor in action, the Medal of Honor, did not come into being until the Civil War. 1861, President Abraham Lincoln signed legislation proposed in Congress by Iowa Senator James Grimes, creating the first Medals of Honor for heroic naval service actions. Congress followed up in 1862, creating the Army's first Medal of Honor, specifically for non-commissioned officers and privates distinguished themselves by their gallant actions. Later, it grew to include officers. Of the nearly 3,500 Medals of Honor awarded to date, a disproportionately small number of African Americans have received the decoration. Less than 3%, or 89 medals of honor, have been awarded to 88 African Americans, with one sailor, Robert Sweeney, receiving two during peacetime, both times for rescuing fellow sailors from drowning in the late 1800s. After the close of the Civil War, 25 African Americans were deemed worthy of the coveted award for their gallant actions, and subsequently six passed the test after the close of the Spanish Civil War. I'm sorry, Spanish-American War. In each case, awards were conveyed shortly after the close of both conflicts. As the 20th century dawned, it became a different story in the awarding of the Medal of Honor to worthy African Americans. It was not until 1991 that the first African American serviceman from World War I, Freddie Stowers, was awarded the Medal of Honor 73 years after he was killed in action. The second World War I recipient, Henry Johnson, of the 369th Infantry, was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously by President Barack Obama in 2015. The lateness of awarding the nation's highest military honor to World War I African American soldiers raises eyebrows and even a casual observer. What is considered America's greatest war fought by America's greatest generation, where systematic racism within the military delayed and almost denied deserving African Americans from receiving the country's highest award for bravery. Out of nearly 500 Medals of Honor awarded for conspicuous gallant actions during the Second World War, only 7 African Americans received the award. This minute number of recipients is in contrast to more than 1 million African Americans who served and a total of 16 million Americans in uniform during the war. And that's a section of the introduction.
Well, I really thank you for writing the book and bringing these gallant men to light and sharing their stories. It's, again, very important to share history to understand what happened and also not to make the same mistakes in the future. I mean, that's like an old saying from I don't know how long. If you don't know your history, then, you know, you're going to, you know, make the same mistakes over and over again. But I think things are changing, but there is still a lot of ways to go. But in terms of being recognized and being able to move up in the armed forces, I believe it is better for the men and women. But this story is so important. Again, thank you, Robert Chow, for writing this book. What's next on the horizon for you? What are you going to be writing about next?
I've been approached by a group of Vietnam naval aviators, helicopter pilots, to write about their story in Vietnam in combat search and rescue, a story that hasn't been told, all the combat search and rescue missions that were completed by the naval aviators in Vietnam. And it looks like that's the next project on the horizon.
That sounds really exciting. I can't imagine what they're going to tell you and what they went through.
Yeah, I know.
That just definitely, I would like to read that. Just I can in my mind right now, I'm picturing the helicopter bed and they're in Vietnam and they're getting shot at and they got to go. And,
yep.
Yeah, a lot of action.
Exactly.
A lot of action. Another movie, I'm already saying it now, though, before somebody else says it.
Okay, you're the first.
I'm the first. Thank you so much, Robert, and I hope you have safe travels. You know, you said you were traveling, you're in the hotel, so please be careful, and remember to wash your hands and use the hand sanitizer. We're still in the middle of COVID, and wear your mask if you need to.
I will, definitely.
Thank you again.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Okay, I'll talk to you later, okay? Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with author Robert Child. We were discussing his book, Immortal Valor, The Black Medal of Honor Winners of World War II. It's an amazing story of about 7 guys. He talks about each of their beginnings in the middle and how they got into the service and the acts that they did and how they got recognized. And many had to be, you know, fought to get recognized. And unfortunately, you know, maybe not even saw the award. They passed away. So I'm going to give away some copies of his book. So you want to follow me again at Joy Keys on Twitter. Check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. I hope you guys have a great weekend, and I hope you can tune in next Saturday to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.